following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
He's an American icon who fought in World War II, gave you Martin Lewis, Martha Ray, George Gobel, Tennessee Ernie Ford, Andy Williams, Fried Green Tomatoes, Spinal Tap, The Princess Bride, The Sure Thing, Stand By Me, The Declaration of Independence, People for the American Way, and a few TV shows.
Maybe you've heard of a couple of these.
All in the Family, Sanford and Son, Maude, Good Times, The Jeffersons, Hot L, Baltimore, One Day at a Time, Mary Harmon, Mary Harmon, The Dumplings, All's Fair, All the Glitters, Fernwood Tonight, America Tonight, Different Strokes, The Facts of Life, The Baxters, Archie Bunker's Place, Silver Spoons, Gloria, Square Pegs, a.k.a. Pablo, Who's the Boss, 227, Sunday Dinner, The Powers That Be, 704 Houser, Channel Umpteen and 3, One Day at a Time on Netflix.
All of the above with Norman Lear. It's all of the above with Norman Lear. No matter who you are, no matter what you do, you know that Norman Lear is just another version of you.
So, my name is Norman Lear, and I come to this address every week to meet a couple of people and do what they call, the word didn't exist just a few years ago, podcast.
Podcast.
The company we do this at is called Podcast One. The show I'm doing is all of the above with Norman Lear, and I do mean we are reaching for all of the above. Knowing we'll never get all of it, but we try. Paul Hipp, my good friend and composer and songwriter and singer and brilliant talent.
Thank you. More.
My compatriot here.
Good morning, Norman. No, good afternoon, Norman.
Good afternoon to you, sir. And we are waiting for...
Oh, this is good.
Somebody I'm working with after a lifetime. I'm finally working with the
It must be Cheetah Rivera.
Wait, you're not here yet.
Oh, my God. She's across the room and I didn't
believe
know it.
Wow. How did you appear like that?
Oh, my God. We were going to build an entrance for her to come through a door.
And I just really
she
screwed it up.
She turned down the door. She turned down the glass window. She turned it off. Hello, Rita, darling.
Hi.
Cheetah Rivera.
It wouldn't be the first time.
Does that happen?
Oh, my goodness. It still happens. That's what's amazing.
Really?
So,
Rita, Cheetah, West Side Story, The Rink, the Ritz.
Oh.
And, yeah, Cheetah, Rita. It's still, we're joined at the hip whether we like it or not.
Have you ever worked together?
We've done a couple of fundraising things together. We actually did America together once with Bette Midler, which was really something else.
Wow.
Yeah, imagine.
That's too much talent on the same stage.
You're not kidding.
Too much talent.
It's great to be here.
So it's wonderful to have you here. And it's, you know, I mentioned a little bit ago that we're doing something together. We are doing on Netflix a show that this is a Latina version because for those of you who don't know, Rita Moreno is, as her name, Moreno, sounds, from Cuba.
Well, I'm really a Puerto Rican person.
That's why I said Cuba, so that you could correct
me. So I could correct you. No, Cuba. Okay, got it. No, he's so sneaky.
He's good that way.
You can't put anything past him.
Because we are doing a Cuba American Family, a version of a show we did years ago called One Day at a Time.
Which ran for how long?
Which ran for 9 years.
Wow. It should happen to us.
And should happen to us and will. And that will put me at 105 and you at 96.
Wow.
Wow.
The two old
farts.
Is that
a deal? Should we make a deal?
The two old farts. Okay, you got it.
All of the above, you are listening and you,
you heard it here.
We just made a deal.
But the show is so marvelous. God, it's a good show. I was having heart attacks the first year, the first season, because I thought if this doesn't succeed, because I knew along with the cast that it was just brilliant, and that it had found the balance between comedy and some very very serious issues. Mm. And it had found that perfect balance. And I just thought it was astonishing.
Those serious issues stem from a family that consists of Justina Machado plays the mother and daughter of Rita Moreno sitting here. And Justina Machado is a veteran, a current veteran. Her husband from whom she is separated. I'm forgetting now for the moment whether they are actually divorced.
They're not really divorced.
They're not yet.
But they, but she plays an army veteran.
An army veteran. Yeah. He is still serving in Afghanistan.
Exactly.
In the first season, he comes back. They have two children, a daughter and a son. The daughter is verging on 16, 17. The son is 12.
And played by
so.
Isabella Gomez, who is just fabulous. Not to speak of absolutely gorgeous. You're hearing somebody not knowing how to turn off their phone.
Yeah, there's somebody in the room that's not turning off their phone.
Well, they're trying real hard, but they don't know how to deal with phones.
Now,
you know who that is? It's my publicist. She dies today after the show.
Yeah, but you know what happens in situations like this?
What?
It's really a nothing, even a little bit of fun that it occurred here. It's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But she could go outside and kill herself.
Well, that's
right
not my
roof.
Problem. I wish at the very least she'd hurt herself.
those of you who are listening, should this result in a suicide, we will promise to let you know.
And by the way, turn your phones off while you're listening, please, so that you don't get interrupted.
Yeah.
Now, my phone is on because I have six kids, and they know that they will always be able to reach me. I will never be in a situation where my phone is off.
You know, I've always... Oh, you're back, huh? You don't know that you're going to die later? Okay. Good luck to you.
Yes, the young woman who caused that moment has
back.
Returned to the room.
She's
and
back.
And her cell phone... If you've ever seen a cell phone off, you should see this one. It is so off.
That's funny.
Have you ever had a cell phone go off during the taping of the show? Which they're now the scourge of Broadway
course.
In the theater.
Of
but during a take, you've had them go off?
Yes, yes. But I have to tell you, rarely.
Yeah.
Really rarely. Our audience apparently is, you know, practically searched so
yeah.
that they don't have it. Sony's very, very fussy about stuff like that anyway. If it happens, it's not so much the audience, it's somebody in the crew.
Oh, that's interesting.
Isn't that funny?
Or Norman.
Or Norman.
Well, you get to have yours on all the time because you're the boss.
Yeah, because you're like Morgan Freeman. If he wants to wear a hat, a baseball cap with a tuxedo, he does it because he's Morgan Freeman. And this you, it's because you are Norman Lear, aren't you?
Know,
am I in the right room?
I swear to God, I did a show years ago with Morgan Freeman called Palmerstown, USA.
Was that a series?
It was a series. And who wrote Haley, Alex Haley. Alex Haley and I, he wrote Roots. We became very good friends. And he told me this true story. He said when he was 9 years old, his best friend in the world was a white kid. They were so close. They were brothers. They were so close that their two families became close in an area in the South where black families and white families did not mix.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole town was up. These two families saw it the way the two boys did, and they were friends. And everything changed when puberty came into the picture. The boys turned 12 and 13, and the girl thing, and it split them apart.
Oh, wait. She was a girl?
No, two boys.
Two boys, yeah.
But when puberty hit and girls and dating
and all of that,
it broke them apart. I said, Alex, that is a television show.
That's a story, yeah.
So... I'll leap ahead to a thing that took place just 8 weeks, 10 weeks ago or something. This was 25 years ago. But 8 weeks ago, I'm someplace in the South talking about something, a big audience. When it's all over, somebody raises his hand and said, Mr. Lear, do you have a photograph of yourself with a little black kid on your shoulder and Alex Haley is next to you with a white kid on his shoulder? From a show you were doing called Bombers. I said, yes, it sits on my desk at this minute. He said, I'm the black kid.
Wow.
Oh, that's great. Oh, what a sweet, sweet story.
Isn't that a great story?
Yeah.
That's lovely.
So we did that show, and you were kicking around through those years doing little things here and there.
And they were little.
Right. Yeah.
They were little.
Little things here and there that won you every single Oscar, Emmy.
EGOT.
Yes. Yeah.
Tell EGOT. Them what EGOT stands
Well, now
for.
It's become a KEYGOT because of the Kennedy Center honors.
Oh, you're a KEYGOT.
What do you think of that?
That's pretty intense.
Now,
That's
would
cool.
you,
what? Kennedy?
Would you tell people who don't know what a KEYGOT is?
These are the initials of all the awards I've won. One is the Kennedy Center Award, and the next one is what?
Emmy.
Emmy.
Grammy.
Grammy. And
Oscar.
Oscar. And Tony.
Tony.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. How many? Wow. There's only like 10?
I don't know, because I honestly don't look those things up. I'm sure there are other people who've had
12.
That privilege, but it's pretty nice.
Wow, yeah.
So how many people are there who have a KEYGOT?
Oh, actually, now there's – did I – we didn't include SAG.
SKEYGOT.
We didn't include SAG.
SKEYGOT.
Which I just gave – presented to Norman – to Morgan Freeman,
which was great. That you guys could have taken that show on the road. If you guys haven't seen this clip, watch it on YouTube. You were presenting, and you guys ended up doing some great shtick.
It really turned out to be so delicious and loving.
Yeah,
that's what I loved about it so much.
Fantastic. So you're a SKEYGOT.
We've been friends for 50 years, Norman.
Wow.
I keep saying Norman. I kept doing that to him, too.
I like that. I like hearing Norman.
You're on my mind.
Yeah.
But we've been together as friends, 50 years since The Electric Company, which was one of the great children's shows.
Well, I grew up with it.
Did you?
Oh, absolutely.
So I want to know, did you learn to read?
Well, I'm still – I'm pretty
You're
good
working
with,
on
know.
It?
Yes, I did. I learned to read. I learned all kinds – I loved that show, and I loved you on
and
it.
Thank you. And it had – you know – almost all the writers from that show eventually came to Hollywood and have been writing series here in Hollywood for years.
Wow.
Some of them are star writers now.
That's
but
amazing.
They started, or at least I think they started with The Electric Company. Great show.
And from that, so a SKEYGOT, I bet there's only one SKEYGOT.
I don't know.
Repeat, please, for this audience, what the SKEYGOT is. The SKEYGOT starts with she won the Senate, the
Screen Actors Guild Kennedy Center Honors, Emmy.
The woman won
Grammy,
an Emmy. The woman won
Oscar,
a Grammy.
Tony.
The woman won
Yay.
An Oscar. And
do I win anything for that?
That's
there is
nice.
Nobody else who's won all that, isn't it? Rita
no,
alone?
That's
not now. I mean, it used to be that there have been other people who did win. I think 4 of them, EGOTs, but. I seem to have just stepped ahead.
But then don't
bit.
You also have like the Presidential Medal?
Oh, I got a bunch of those.
Yeah. Add those on there and let's spell that out.
but the one with Obama was the one it's the one I treasure.
Yeah.
That was marvelous. We have some great pictures of him talking to me and my hugging him. And, we had a rehearsal that day. This is a good story because this is so me. And the day before, and this was, I don't even remember which one this was, honestly, but it was a wonderful award, and they instructed us, this is where you'll go to. You'll be seated here, and then you'll go up onto the riser, and your name will be called out, and the president will then put the necklace around you with the medallion, and he will probably shake your hand, and that's that. And I
this
know,
was every, Obama.
This is during Obama's, yeah,
right.
And when he was the first time around, and we all said, right, okay, fine. And the next night, they call several names and they get decorated, and then my name was called Rita Moreno, and I was controlled until I got up to the stage, and he smiled at me. He has a dazzling smile, and I just grabbed him. and I went, ah! And I just embraced him. And his wife was right smack in the front row, and I just went, sorry. Couldn't help myself. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience. He's a dazzler.
What a thing to have gone from, because you were in Washington, just feet from Dr. King as he gave the I Have a Dream speech.
I was literally—
To go from that to—
No, it's just astonishing because—
President Obama's White House.
Harry Belafonte decided at the time, just before that amazing event happened, that he wanted some Hollywood people who were political at the time and activists. He wanted them on the podium with Dr. King also. He wanted very much for Dr. King to know that there were certain people in Hollywood who really did care, and they weren't oblivious, and they weren't Hollywood-y, and, you know, that kind of thing. And I was one of the people he invited because I'd been quite active at the time. I had kind of discovered my political self at that time. So I did go on that airplane with James Garner, with Sammy Davis Jr., with Diane Carroll, with all kinds of astonishing people. And we literally sat not more than 15 feet away from him at the Lincoln Memorial itself.
Wow.
And, it's an astonishing experience. You cannot imagine what that was like. And it was, I was there. I heard Mahalia Jackson, I think it was, who said to Martin, tell him about your dream. Tell him about your dream.
Wow.
And that's when he went off script and did the, because she'd heard him say that speech before in churches. And he just went off script and started to say, I had a dream. Oh, my God. Right now I've got the huge goosebumps.
And so have I.
Yeah, so do I.
I mean, I've got goosebumps the size of doorknobs right now. It was just an amazing moment. And it was she who said, tell him about the dream. Tell him about the dream, Martin.
No idea.
Ooh. You've lived some amazing moments, madam.
Isn't that? Oh, gosh, I'm just one big goosebump.
Yes.
I really am. It was an extraordinary. Let me tell you also about James Garner, because he did something that for him was very, very brave. He came and he attended. And I can tell you that on the airplane going to D.C., he was guzzling Pepto-Bismol. He had an ulcer.
Mm.
And he was terrified. He was terrified that this could ruin his career.
Wow.
But he went and he attended. And I've always adored him for that. We were good friends for a long time. But I love to tell that story about him because he really, really was terrified. His ulcer was just giving him hell.
You were good friends also with another legend.
Yeah.
Beyond legend, I guess, for those who knew Marlon Brando, old enough to know that name well.
Yeah, we were more than friends. We were.
I was getting to that.
Oh.
I was getting. But I loved that you offered we were more than friends. No, you had an 8-year.
We had an 8-year relationship.
Relationship.
Yeah, very, to say the least, turbulent and stormy. Boy, oh boy, oh boy, but I'm kind of glad we did. He was something else. He's a very, very sexy guy.
Whatever it is, you can tell us about
him. Of course.
I'd love to know.
I'll tell you what. He was one of the funniest persons I have ever met in my life. He was hilariously funny. And, I mean, he could have had a career just being funny. He could imitate anybody. He could also imitate sounds like a button rolling off a table and falling on the floor.
Wow.
I remember that one. And
what years was this? What year?
I don't remember years. I don't know.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to do a little imitation of a button rolling on a table and falling off a floor.
Landing on the floor.
Yeah.
But he was extremely funny. And when he was impersonating people, he would impersonate his agents for whom he had not an iota of respect. It was to pee in your knickers. I mean, it was hilarious. And sometimes he would put them on speaker. He was mean. He put them on speaker and just do make horrible faces and stuff till I would have to run out of the room.
Until they peed in their knickers?
I peed in my knickers. But he
now,
was,
is, I have to ask you if this is true. It's a, it's mythic that there was a time in your relationship with Marlon Brando when, for whatever reason, you wished to make him jealous.
Oh, yeah.
And you did that by dating
Elvis Presley.
Elvis fucking Presley.
Isn't you guys, that amazing?
This makes you the coolest person on the planet.
I mean, my daughter, younger people say to me, you what?
That's incredible.
You dated Elvis Presley? Oh. And they look at me now with my white hair and all that, and they just can't process it. I did it to make him jealous because I found some ladies' clothing in his house.
Undies?
Yeah.
They weren't stained knickers or anything.
Oh, please. Like, no. And I just saw them, and I went crazy. And it just so happened, literally, that about 2 days later, I left the house, of course, in tears and enraged and hurt and devastated. And 2 days later, I get a phone call. Hello? And I hear, Miss Marina? And I said, yes. He says, this is Colonel, what was the
Colonel Tom Parker.
This is Colonel Parker. And I wanted to say, oh, I could never have guessed. You know? And I manage Elvis Presley. I do a bad accent.
Because, that's great.
Because his stuff was, really very country, and I don't know how to do that. Anyway, and I said, yes. And he said, well, my client spotted you in the commissary at 20th Century Fox, and he liked what he saw. And I said, thinking about Marlon Brando, and I said, yes. Yep. And he said, well, he would like very much to meet you. Would you like to meet him? And I thought of that underwear, and I said to him, yes, I would. And so I dated, and it was, of course, this is before social media. Uh-huh. But, man, it got out so fast. He took me to a nightclub, which at the time was called, I'm sure you remember, Moulin Rouge.
Moulin Rouge.
Remember?
Yes,
it was a very popular nightclub.
In Hollywood.
And that was our first date in Hollywood, yeah. And I remember almost having my eye put out because people were bringing their menus, which were huge, like 2 feet long, and waving them at him so he would sign them because they spotted him immediately. It was very unpleasant. And it was all over the papers. It was on the radio.
Was it a single date?
No, we had a few, but yes. He didn't have...
He was a great deal, I'm not thinking chronologically, but he had to have been a great deal younger than Marlon.
He was. And let me tell you something. He was really kind of beautiful.
Elvis.
Yeah. He was kind of beautiful. He almost had a feminine kind of beauty. And, you know, perfect teeth and beautiful, shiny black hair.
Yeah.
And what happened, well, it's in the book. What happened was that... he never went all the way with ladies. I don't want to be crude about this. It's in the book.
Oh, really? No, you're not being crude.
All the way covers it.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, is it me? And I said, no, it can't be me. Marlon thinks I'm swell.
Wow, so Elvis, oh, interesting.
And apparently that was the story with a number of other young women that he dated.
You think he was called? He was just a southern gentleman?
I don't know.
I
really don't know. I would love to say that I know, but I don't know.
What is a date with Elvis like? What does it happen? Does he pick you up in his car?
Yeah, he picks me up in his car, and he's truly. I was looking at his,
At his what?
Shut up, you dirty old man. I was looking at his profile as he drove us.
Is that what you call it?
The place. His beautiful profile. And thinking, boy, he really is. He's really even more handsome than I thought he was. What was it like? It was so boring.
Really? This is my hero. Oh, no.
Well, why? I mean, what? Did you want to go to bed with him?
Me? No.
Well, then what's the problem?
No. But I didn't think you could have a great long conversation with him, did you?
Yeah, I thought like Elvis and I would like hang out, talk about.
Well, you know, you probably could have, but with a girl.
Yeah.
And he did like.
Oh, and he had all those dudes around him, right? All his, gang.
Not with me. Not with me. We went out together alone. And, he was, you know, when you've been with Marlon Brando, for Pete's sake, for many years already at that point.
Yeah.
It's really hard to make conversation with someone like that. He was young.
Right.
He was, and I say this with affection. He couldn't help what he was, but he was really dull.
Really dull.
He was so dull.
So you drive along and he would just say like,
He'd say, oh, shit, I didn't make that light. You know, stuff like that. And I go,
But then you went to the Moulin Rouge.
We went to the Moulin Rouge. We saw the show.
And he had a reservation.
And he had I thought you were going to say an erection.
I don't
trust you anymore. No. You're just a dirty, dirty person.
You say it and then call me dirty.
That was a good trick.
Hey, touche. Touche, old man.
He had a reservation, so the maitre d' has been waiting to see Rita Moreno in the company.
No, he's not
of
waiting
Elvis.
To see Rita Moreno. He's waiting to see Elvis.
Elvis Presley.
And who is with him? And
how the head waiter and the waiter related to Elvis Presley.
They were truly bowing and scraping. He was a very simple young man. Yeah. He was a country boy.
Mm.
And he didn't even get that bowing, scraping part.
Yeah.
He really didn't.
He didn't see it.
No, he didn't see it.
Right.
And, you know, he was so accustomed at that point. He was already into his third movie, perhaps. And actually, the way I met him, I forgot about this, was at the studio. Yeah, Colonel Polko. Said, would you like to visit him? He's shooting right now at, I think it was at Paramount, not Fox.
Yeah.
And he was at Fox for a meeting or something when he saw me. And I went to see him. Yes. When I went to see him and visited the set. And there he was. And it was really an extraordinary experience because I thought, oh, my God, this is the other king.
Mm.
You know, I know this king. And now I'm meeting.
Well, and Brando and Elvis.
Wait. And he was waving to me because they were about to go into a take. And it was Love Me Tender. What film was that?
Love Me Tender was the first one.
Originally
titled The Reno Brothers. They changed it to Love Me Tender because they put a song in at the end, much to Elvis's chagrin. Because he wanted to be a serious actor.
Hey, that's very good.
Thank you very much. I played him in a very bad TV movie. But
did
that's,
you?
Yes,
that's very
but we're
good.
Here
I think it was Love Me Tender.
Love Me Tender.
No. Please.
All my dreams.
Okay, I'm getting it. Oh, yeah.
Or my darling.
I wish I had the guitar.
You're good. That's good. You have a great ear. Do you do impersonations?
Well, no. I mean, I can, yeah. But I love Elvis.
Let's do that in the clear. What you just did.
Love me tender, love me true, all my dreams fulfill.
Woo!
And then he gets really going to love me tender, love me true.
I love it.
For my darling, I love you.
Well,
right,
you
I'll
can
stop
make
now.
It Brando.
And I always will.
And I always
you can make it Brando, dear. Presley, and hip.
Oh, my God.
There's still time.
I can make your next book.
But that was really a crazy time in my life, wasn't it?
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
My.
I mean, the two great icons of all time.
Let's just say, among icons, because there are a lot of icons, they had to be two of the most individually perched on the icon ladder.
You know, you're right.
No,
there are icons and then there are icons.
There's Brando nobody impressive. That ever was ever perched above either of them.
No.
No. I mean, Marlon Brando, when you saw him in film, he was astonishing.
Well, he just looked like the ultimate sexual.
And he was.
Yeah.
And he was. And
we could give him credit, in addition to other things, for inventing the T-shirt.
That's right.
And the cigarettes in the arm.
That's right, and the cigarettes and biker boots as well.
That's right.
You know, jeans. What are you rebelling against?
You know what's interesting about him also, which always amazes me, because he certainly did not have a beautiful speaking voice. He had a high voice. Remember? See, everybody forgets that. They see that fierce, gorgeous face of his. I mean, he looked like a Roman coin.
He did.
And he really did in person. He was just absolutely striking. But he had that little voice. And every time he would call me, this would happen. I'd say, hello? And there'd be a long space, and I knew it was him. And then he'd finally say, Rita?
I'm guessing a date with him was not boring.
Oh, no. No, it was never boring with him, ever. No. Ever.
Did you know his island? In Hawaii?
Yeah, actually, he...
Tahiti.
Teteora is his island. And he invited myself and my husband to go visit it, but my husband had a heart condition and I was scared
to
death.
What a life you've led. You also married a Jew.
You're right.
Marlon Brando,
a Jewish
Elvis
doctor.
Presley,
I married a nice Jewish doctor, which I know is redundant. But, yes. And we were married for 46 years.
Wow.
Right. When did he pass, Rita?
It's about 7 years now. Yeah. But, Marlon was still in my life. Now and then he'd call, and we would talk for an hour, 2 hours, because he did that.
Mm.
And then I finally said to him, you know, you really... If you're going to keep calling, you have to say hello to Lenny and talk to him for a while, too. He said, sure.
Well, he might be the coolest of the three because he – how does a guy be okay with the fact that you went with two of the great icons of Elvis and Brando?
They weren't great to him. I mean, Presley, he didn't care. Presley, he's a nice Jewish doctor. What do you care about? I'll tell you something interesting, though, something very sweet about my husband. There are many sweet things about him. We were doing a film together, Marlon and I, and thanks to Marlon, I got the gig because the studio didn't want me. They wanted somebody more famous and all that. And he really stood up for me, and then they wanted to pay me almost nothing, and he talked them out of that to pay me a decent salary for being the leading lady in a film called The Night of the Following Day, which you can actually see. I think it's YouTube or one of those places.
Oh, cool.
And, it's the last time he looked beautiful, by the way. It's the last time. And we both wore blonde wigs. He said to me, come on, change your look. And we went to this famous wig place in Paris called Caritas. And he wore a blonde wig and I wore a blonde wig. And we had a kind of love scene, which turns into a lover's quarrel in the movie. And we did, whenever I worked with him, we did a lot of improvising because I was up for that. I loved it. I thought it was kind of fun, and I'd never done that before. And that was his thing anyway. He loved to improvise. And at that point, he hated the script, which always happened in all of his movies. He hated the writing. He hated the director. He hated everything. I became the go-between. He stopped talking to the director. I'm veering away from what I wanted to tell you, but it's so interesting. He said to him, Hubert Cornfield was the name of the director.
I remember him.
Yeah. And he said to the director one day, I don't want to talk to you again. I don't ever want to talk to you again. You send somebody to tell me whatever it is you want. And guess who became the go-between? Me. So I was always going into Marlon's room and saying, Marlon, Hubert said that he would rather that you stepped on that other step instead of this one. And would you also please take out the handkerchief when you say such and such a line? I mean, this is what I was doing. And one time I went in to talk to him, and he was lying on the floor, and he said, oh, God, my back is killing me. Step on me, would you? I said, okay, so I took off my shoe. I mean, I was so used to this. We did this all the time when we were going together. So I was stepping and walking on his back, and the door opens. And the assistant director says, "Oh my God! Oh, I'm so sorry, so sorry." I said, "No, no, 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 no. It's okay. I'm just massaging Marlon's back.
Adjustment. I'm just adjusting him."
It was crazy. We wait. So here's the thing, because this tells you something rather sweet about my husband. So we do this lover's quarrel scene, and I'm supposed to slap him, and I have real problems striking people. I really do. Even as an actress, it's just so difficult for me to do that. And I kept not doing it, but I do, you know, one of those little baby slaps. He said, "No, no, this is not going to work if you don't really slap me. So let's rehearse this." So we rehearsed and rehearsed, and I kept doing baby slaps. He said, "Rita, damn it, come on. We're not going to do this scene until you really slap me." So I said, "If I promise I will when we're rolling, will you leave me alone?" He said, "Okay, but you're going to do it, right?" So I said, "Yes, okay." Comes the scene, and I say to him, the line was, "Well, where have you been all night? I've been waiting for you," on that kind of thing. "And you're having an affair with another woman," in the thing. And he said, "No, I'm not." I said, "Yes, you are." And I haul off and slap him. This still gives me chills. Well, his hairline went back at least an inch. Like a wild animal. Rita Moreno just gave me a slap, a real slap on the face, and he hauls off and slaps me right back. I now know, because of that experience, what people mean when they say I saw stars. I really saw stars. Well, when he did that, all of that muck came up, all of that pond scum came up from the past. And I hauled off and started to attack him and screaming and crying. And the director, smart guy, never said cut.
Oh, good.
And to this day, I hear from fans saying it's the best scene in the movie.
Wow.
Okay. So that's...
He used it. He used the bulk of that fight in the
film. Oh, my God. But, I mean, he really slapped me so hard that I was actually black and blue, my jaw.
Oh, my God.
Because I bruise very easily anyway. Anyway, a couple of days later, they were showing that scene for the dailies. And I didn't want to go because it just brought up such horrific memories. And I said, "Lenny, I'm going to ask you a really big favor. Would you go see the dailies tonight?"
You were married by then.
We were married, and we had a little girl, you know, Fernanda. Yeah. And I said, "I'm warning you, I got really upset because Marlon hit me kind of hard and all that kind of stuff." And he said, "Okay." And I said, "Oh, thank you. I want to be sure it's okay." And he went to see it, and I am on tenterhooks. And he finally comes back to the hotel where we were staying. And I said, "So, how was it?" God bless my husband. He said, "Boy, you two are such good actors." That's what he said.
Wow.
I thought I was going to hear you say, he said, "Do you have his number? I'm going to kill that son of a bitch."
No. No, he knew what it was. Yeah. It was acting. But the way he said it, "You two are such good actors." And I said, "That's it?" He said, "Yeah, why? Should it be anything else?" And I said, no.
Yeah.
What's the name? I want to write that down. I want to see that picture.
The Night of the Following Day.
The Night of the Following Day.
I've
got to see that scene, having heard that.
It's based on a true story about the Peugeot kidnapping, when they kidnapped the Peugeot daughter, you know, the car company.
Yeah.
And it's based on that. And because it was a young girl who played that part in the movie.
Was that the first you'd worked with Brando?
Marlon? Yeah, the only time.
So what did you learn? Was there anything that you, as an actor?
Yes,
I did.
I did. I had a scene where I'm supposed to be high on cocaine.
Huh.
Now, I am not a druggy person, never have been a druggy person. I think twice in my life I tried grass and it did not agree with me. So I have a scene in a bathtub, and it looks it's beautifully photographed because the entire room is white. My skin is very white. The hair is very white. And they put milk in the water so it wasn't transparent. So it looked beautiful. And she's supposed to be nodding off, and he comes in and he says, "God damn it, you're high again, aren't you?" And I say, no, absolutely not. Now, I didn't know how to be cocaine high. I didn't have a clue. So I got drunk. I drank like half of a bottle of wine, which was a lot for me then. And I got drunk. And they went to see the dailies 2 days later, and he said, "We have to do it again." And I said, "Oh, no, why?" Because I found it very difficult. They also made me sniff sugar, which was just Ooh. Very unpleasant. Ooh. Anyway, I said, "I don't want to do that." He says, "You have to." I said, "Why? What happened? Was I that bad?" He said, "Well, no, you weren't high. You were drunk." And I said, "Oh, okay."
There is a difference.
Yeah. And so he directed me in that one, and he made me look high.
Yeah.
But we did it again. Yeah, I had to do it again.
Well, Rita, this is one of those moments where one feels this, all of the above is more than we can cover.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say was, I don't recall sitting so long listening and wanting to listen for another hour and a half.
Wow. Really? Wow.
Wait, besides those guys, didn't you know Howard Hughes?
Yeah. How do you know that?
Because I just know I'm a fan. There, I said it.
A fan of Howard Hughes?
No, you.
Oh, you read the book.
Yeah, so what was that like?
That was bizarre. That was really bizarre.
God, I forgot my book. I wanted to get it signed. Oh, anyway,
go ahead.
We can
always do that.
Yeah, okay.
Well, my agents called me one time. And, you know, don't ask me dates. I never remember dates.
Yeah, because I was wondering if you had the shoeboxes on your feet.
No. He was still functioning.
Yeah.
My agents called me one time and they said, maybe, Norman, you know the name of the man. Oh, his last name was Kane. The man who got ladies for him. Somebody Kane.
What, like you had a procurer?
Well, no, he was.
An agent?
I think he was supposed to be an agent, but he wasn't really in his last. I've never forgotten his last name, Kane. And he was very well known in Hollywood. And he would find ladies, or he would apparently do favors for him, whatever that happened to be.
Right.
So my agents called me one time, and they said, "So-and-so Kane called. Do you know who that is?" And I said, doesn't he work for Howard Hughes? Yes. Well, Mr. Hughes wants to meet you. And my jaw dropped. I said, "Howard Hughes wants to meet me?" And, you know, I'm looking at my chest thinking, why? Because, you know, he loved these ladies with big breasts and stuff. And I'm thinking, why on earth would he want to meet me? And they said, yes, he really does. And I said to them, well, how do I do that? How do I meet him? And I said, you know, yeah. Well, I was a big producer. Who knows? Maybe I'll get lucky. And I must tell you, I was really a pretty good girl. And I said, well, they said, well, we'll call you back. So they called me back 2 days later, and Mr. Kane, whatever the hell his first name was.
Citizen.
Calls me, and says, yes, Mr. Hughes would like to meet you at the Goldwyn Studios. And I thought, oh, in his office? He said, no. He wants to meet you tomorrow night at 11 o'clock at night at the screening room 2A, whatever it was at the time. And I said, well, can I call you back? And I called my agent. I said, he wants to meet me by myself. Please come with me. I mean, this shows you really how awful agents were in those times that you hear about, that they didn't protect you. They couldn't care less.
Right.
And if I was going to go to bed with the man, they'd be thrilled because maybe I'd get a gig.
And they'd get 10%.
And they get 10%, yeah. Right. And I said, oh, no, honey, no, we don't do that. You'll be fine. but I'm really nervous. Oh, come on, it's going to be fine. Where are you meeting him? And I said, at the studio, at this screening room where he's seeing a movie. And he was apparently wearing what do you call these?
Headphones.
Headphones. And I said, I'm just afraid he may try something and I don't know what to do. And I want, come on. So I get up all of my nerve, dress up as cute as I can, but, you know, practically wore an elastic over my bosom just to look as flat as I possibly could, which wasn't hard. And I get there, and it's nighttime, and you're at a studio, and there's a guy at the gate, but there's nobody else there. And where can I find a screening room, blah, blah? And the guard tells me, and I go to it, and I stand before the door for the longest time. And I finally knocked on the door, and Hughes opens the door and says, in a very high, reedy voice, hello, come on in. And really reedy, thin little voice, thin man. Mm. And he's got the phones around his neck. He said, you're just in time. He said, I'm going to watch a movie. You want to watch with me? And I said, sure. You know, look, rolling my eyes around thinking, oh, God. And you know what the movie was? It was called, it was an Italian movie called Pagliacci. And he said, I want seeing this movie because there's a girl that I'm interested in that I might want to sign. I said, okay, so it's the opera, Pagliacci. And it was all looped, you know, with opera singers.
Yeah.
Opera singers. Gina Lollobrigida.
That's who he was looking at.
That's who he was looking at. And I watched this movie, which was really pretty bad. It was just one of those bad Italian movies. Yeah. Really cheap production, all of that. And at the end of it, he turns to me and takes off his phones and he says, so what did you think? And I said, of the movie? He said, no, of her. And I said, well, I don't think she's a very good actress. And he said, oh, yeah? I said, yeah. And that was it. Then he said goodnight. And somebody walked me to my car. I honestly don't remember how that happened, but I know that somebody walked me to my car. And I know what it is. Yeah. And that was that. And I thought, well.
Strange.
It's very odd. About 2 weeks later, Mr. Kane calls up again. Mr. Hughes would like to see Rita again. And now I really got worried. He liked what he saw, I guess. I don't know. So, but since the other time
seems... I have absolutely no idea where this is going.
No, you don't.
Given the story so far.
Yeah, I love it.
You have no idea.
I love it.
Right. So, we got to put this in the show. So, this time I am told, go to the airport to meet him at Mike Lyman's restaurant. Do you remember that restaurant that looked like
I remember the name well. I don't remember.
It was a restaurant at the airport that looked like a saucer, a flying saucer. That's what it looked like at the
time. LAX?
Yeah.
Wow.
And actually it's still there, but it's called something else now.
Yeah, the thing when you pull in the parking lot that...
Yes,
oh, okay.
right. So, this time a car came for me. A limousine came for me. And I was living with my mom in literally a bungalow in Culver City because MGM was where I was under contract to at the time. And the guy lets me off, and I say, what do I do? Where do I go? He said, just go inside. He's upstairs. I said, okay. So I take the elevator, and I swear the place really does look like a flying saucer. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's a very weird place. And I'm looking for him, and I don't find him. And I spot him in the very, very corner of this flying saucer, where the lights are changing all the time, by the way. Flick, 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 flick.
Meeting Howard Hughes in a spaceship.
Exactly. So I go to the table, and I remember I was very tanned at the time. And I wore a little open – a dress that was open on top so you could see my shoulders. And I was probably looking very cute because I was a pretty cute girl. Mm. And I sit down. I say, hi. And he says, hello. And we start to talk. And he's talking to me like was the car all right? Is the ride? I said, it's just fine. Fine. And he starts to explain radar to me.
Really?
We order, and then he starts to explain radar to me. And I didn't understand what he was talking about for a moment. And I remember also he was putting the peas aside because he didn't like peas.
And so
I'm trying to, and I remember he said something that really scared me. We were talking for a while, and I was saying, uh-huh. Oh, really? Wow. That's how I was responding to all this talk about radar. Oh, my goodness. Really? Wow. That's so interesting. I didn't know what he was talking about. And at some point, I think he was charmed by me, and he just said, you're a beautiful young woman. And I thought, oh, my God. He said, you're a beautiful young woman. And it was okay, though. We went on eating, and it was over. It's over. He takes me down to the car and goes into the car with me and says, well, I'll take you home. And the driver drives me home. And he gets out of the car, helps me out of the car, all gentlemanly. And I must have seemed very, very young to him. And he takes me to the little porch of our little, literally a bungalow. And it's dark. And I take my hand out and I say, to shake his hand, I say, well, thank you so much, Mr. Hughes. I had a good time. Thank you. It was really interesting. And he says, what? Because he was hard of hearing.
Oh, really?
He was very hard of hearing. Very hard of hearing. But apparently in the restaurant it seemed okay. But there... Mm. Because I was speaking softly because it was midnight. Mm. It was late. So I said, thank you so much, putting my hand out again. It was a really nice evening, and thank you for, I love the dinner. Thank you. And he said, what? Again, he said, listen, honey, I can't hear well. So I said, thank you so much. I had a great evening, and lights go on all over the neighborhood. My mom turns on the light in the porch, and I see her little face sticking out the window, and that was the end of my. Of course, you don't know where this was going because who could guess this?
It was just you and Howard Hughes outside,
me and
making
Howard
all
Hughes.
That noise. He yeah. sounds less interesting than Elvis.
You know what? You're right.
How did he tip?
Ooh. Oh,
I don't remember that. See, I didn't even look.
That is a good question.
That's a great question.
That's why he's the host.
Yeah.
He's very good at this.
But isn't that a crazy story?
That is a crazy story.
You know, I got scared because I thought if I get a third call, I'm just going to be out of town or something. Well, I'm too scared.
that's a couple of weird evenings with Howard Hughes.
And as I said, I was really very young for my age in the way in which I behaved also.
Yeah.
I had a high little speaking voice then. And he probably thought I was sweet.
Well, when I woke up this morning, I couldn't have guessed in a million years that I would be talking this afternoon or hearing about Marlon Brando, the three names together, Elvis Presley, Marlon Brando, and Howard Hughes. Those may be the three greatest fucking celebrities.
Talk about artists. Iconic. Isn't that interesting?
Artists. Of the century.
Great artists.
And Rita Moreno.
This little Puerto Rican girl.
The little Puerto Rican girl.
Yeah.
Knew the three of them and spoke of the three of them today. Thank you, Ms. Moreno.
From the Bronx, right?
Yeah, well, it's Moreno.
Moreno.
Thank you. From the Bronx.
How did you come to L.A.?
Huh?
Oh, you'd done Broadway.
No, I came under contract to MGM. A talent scout actually saw me, believe it or not, in New York.
A talent scout.
We've got to do this again.
Talent scout.
The curtain came down and we've got to quit.
Is that what the curtain means?
No, I know. But
it's for pictures in a minute.
Pictures in a minute.
Yeah, whenever you guys are done. Yeah. I'm in a rush.
Wait, anyway, I think
we're done. I think we're done for now.
Yeah, no, I think we're done for now, but not before I tell you.
What?
There's nobody more interesting, dearer, sweeter, funnier, more touching than Marita Moreno.
And isn't there a show that you guys do that's
I love you
back?
Too, very yeah, much.
And I can't wait to see this third
season.
We
have a creative love affair going on here.
Well, two icons who have a show. Season two drops soon, doesn't it?
It drops this Friday.
On the Netflix. Yeah. Streaming on Netflix. Yep. One day at a time.
And I've read two reviews so far, and they are
aren't they extraordinary?
Oh, my God. I've never seen such reviews.
It's a repeat of season one, which got love letters.
No, even
and
even
season
more.
Two is getting...
No, it's even more. It's even better more. They're longer. They're more detailed. And one of them actually says, I can't single anyone out because everybody is so fabulous.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Give me your favorite line that one said about you.
At what?
Do you have a favorite line that one of them said about you personally that you would never say because you're modest, but I've asked you?
Actually, I don't know. I don't know.
That's very modest of you. I think you do, but you're just being modest.
No. I saw one the other day somewhere else that I loved a lot. And you know what?
I love the one that the headline that says she doesn't look over 84. I thought that was terrific. Rita, I love you. Paul, thank you. I love you too.
Paul, this was really fun. I love the questions.
So great.
This has been all of the above.
What does it mean, this life, this day and night?
So I'm Norman Lear, and you can find me, should you wish to hunt me down, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at The Norman Lear.
And you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Paul Hicks. I'm alive,
and life is good, and space and time, give me some of yours, I'll give you some of mine.
Podcast One has new shows on our new app. Check out all the cool features to help you explore our exciting new programming, like America's Lakers podcast with Jay Moore, So Random with Corinne Olympios, Attack Each Day, The Harbaugh's podcast, Not Just Sports with Susie Schuster and Rich Eisen, and Sessions with Randy Jackson, as well as your old favorites like The Lady Gang, Steve Austin, Shaquille O'Neal, and Adam Carolla. Get the new Podcast One app in the App Store, Google Play, or podcastone.com.